What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Now at McDonald's, get a $5 McChicken meal deal or a $6 McDouble meal deal. They come with small fries, a soft drink, and four-piece McNuggets. We're going to need a bigger tray. Get more value with your meal deal with McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Good evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back to the X Pink and Spaces. It's been a little while, hasn't it, since we've done one of these? And I think it's fair to say a lot has changed in the Norwich City stratosphere since the last one of these we did, which in fact I'm scratching my head a little bit to try and remember, but I'm pretty sure it may well have even been in the dark times of last season. Last year, not quite last season. Feels an awful lot like last season now. I'm your host, Connor Southwell. I'm joined by Adam Harvey, who I'll bring on in a second if I can speak. And this is a show really that is all about giving you guys an opportunity to tell us what you think about Norwich City, where they're at, where they're going. Anything at all is on the table. We want you guys really to try and set the agenda. You can talk about the international break. You can just come on and Lord Philippe Clement if you wish, and I'm sure we will join you in that endeavour as well. So you can request to speak. There should hopefully be a button on your screen somewhere where you can come on and do that, and it'll be great to hear from lots of you. Otherwise it'll just be me and Adam talking to ourselves, and there's a whole hour long podcast on YouTube that you can watch of that. And I'm sure you're probably sick of the sound of our voices, having to hear them so much. But having said that, I am going to bring Adam in. Adam, hello, good evening. I was about to say it's nice to see you, but I can't actually see you. It's nice to hear you virtually. How are you this evening on, what is certainly windy out there again, isn't it? It seems like the temperatures have dipped in recent days.
Yeah, very well. It does feel like we've seen an awful lot of each other in recent weeks with the amount of fixtures. That Norwich City have got through, not that's a bad thing. It's been quite nice, I think, just to sort of take a little bit of a breather over the last few days, and just kind of maybe collectively get our thoughts about where the season could go between now and the end of the season, and probably starting to turn the wheel, I guess, a little bit maybe towards the summer and what that could look like for Norwich City, which I'm sure plenty of the people listening might be intrigued to have a conversation about.
Yeah, we want to hear from you tonight about, as I said, anything at all. It can be about current form. It can be about the team and maybe some selection decisions. It can be about next season, how excited you are, how Norwich City raised the ceiling, and where, of course, maybe you feel they need to add in the summer window to really continue what has been quite the trajectory under Philippe Clement. And before we get into some of those topics, it's worth doing a little bit of admin. So as I said, it's been a little while since we've done one of these. There's lots of reasons for that I won't bore you with. Now we have Adam on board and we are back to a three-man team, coupled with, I think, the fact that the championship schedule is probably from here on in a little bit calmer. I don't think there's too many midweeks, Adam. You might correct me if I'm wrong. I think there's one home one, isn't there, now?
Yep.
Is that right?
So that is right.
The schedule has calmed down a little bit, so we're hoping to make the Wednesday slot a little bit of a regular one for you, and to give you that opportunity to come on as we have done previously and to have your say. We've had some brilliant debates on here over the season, and it's definitely something that we want to ramp up again towards the back end of the season, and then obviously heading into the summer. We might have a little break over the World Cup, but certainly towards the back end of the summer, to have a more sort of debate and conversation about Norwich City heading into next season, where it'll definitely become hopefully a regular fixture of our coverage as well. So hopefully that's the admin out of the way. I wanted to start tonight obviously by speaking about the news that we probably all saw today surrounding obviously former Norwich City head coach Liam Manning, who's been granted some compassionate leave by Huddersfield Town. Just really wanted to wish him well, essentially. And I know, Adam, obviously we both dealt with him at the start of the season, and it didn't go the way that he would have liked. I think that's fair to say. It didn't go the way anyone would have liked, but you can only take people as you find them. I've said this on a few places before. He was always very good to deal with. He was very, I've said this a few times, I found him a lot more personable off camera than on camera, and that's fine. Some people aren't as personable on camera. But I think it's near on, you know, I'm a dad, so I can obviously connect with this. I'm sure there'll be people listening who are parents as well. Just feels impossible to kind of comprehend really what he has been through in the last 12 months or so, and to really relate that to, yeah, anything, yeah, just to relate with that on any sort of level. It's unimaginable. It's an impossible scenario as a parent that he has been through to lose a child. And I think it's bound to impact you really profoundly. So, yeah, obviously our thoughts are with Liam, and hopefully he can get himself back into a space where he can make, come back and make a really positive impact at Huddersfield Town next season. But obviously most importantly, get himself into a position where he's in a good headspace, and that's for him and his family as well. So, yeah, it was, just to sort of bring you in on that, Adam. It's never nice to see that with anyone. I think it's maybe a bit of a stark reminder about maybe the important things in life. I think that's fair to say. Obviously something's bigger than football. And there were times, I think, when I spoke to Liam where you kind of sort of, I don't know, you try and connect with what he's been through, and it's just impossible to do so. It's unimaginable kind of what him and his family have been through in the last 2 years or so.
Yeah, as you say, I think it does put things into perspective and kind of the importance and value that family and friends hold it in our lives, and probably, you know, sort of professional, what we do for a professional living, sort of, yeah, it is almost redundant in regards to that on that level. And for him, obviously the involvement in being a football coach and such a high pressure environment and the grueling nature of it, the amount of games and, you know, the training schedules and everything that comes with it. Yeah, I can imagine that's not been easy to deal with, all of that. And then you've got all of that stuff going on in your personal life as well that you're trying to deal with as well. So, yeah, I think probably for him, it's come now at a good time just to step away from all of that and just focus on himself and his family, which, you know, ultimately is what matters most.
Yeah, we wish him well, and hopefully he'll be back in the dugout next season and in a better place. Right, let's move on then to Norwich City. I think we, you know, unless anyone wants to come on and provide the agenda for us, we've got a few people in here, so it'd be great to welcome someone on and join the debate today. As I said, you can do so by clicking the request to speak button, which should hopefully be in the corner of your screens if you want to come on and provide your opinions on anything that we are going to discuss. But let's touch upon Charlton, Adam. That feels like a decent place to start. Feels like about 2 weeks ago now, as is everything in football moves so quickly. Huge win, isn't it? I mean, I know we discussed this in detail on the podcast, but I think for me, what stood out was that kind of mentality, that ability that even in adversity, we kind of knew the circumstances around it in terms of they got late back from Southampton in the early hours of Thursday. Then you have to train and there's the recovery and you have to travel again. You can decide how big the violin is you want to get out for them, but they're still in very difficult circumstances, particularly when you don't have the players then to rotate and to alter the squad. So it speaks to their mentality probably, and also what Philippe Clement has done, because let's be honest, it's not a passive style of play that he's trying to implement. It is one that goes and presses opponents high, that wants to be aggressive, that wants to play on the front foot. That takes so much out of you from a physical perspective. It's the same group of players that had to go again because of all of those injuries and the lack of squad depth that they've got at this moment in time. With that circumstance, it probably feels even more remarkable, the performance and the way that they played at the Valley on Saturday.
Yeah, for all the reasons you outlined there, really, you know, the fact that he's had very limited opportunities to do huge rotations. You know, he's tried to sort of manage that squad over the last couple of months with, yeah, just the sheer volume of players that are missing. Thankfully, there's a few of those hopefully going to be back the other side of the break. It looks like Oscar Svartal's back on the grass from sort of the pictures the club posted today. And I think we expect Mo Torre to be soon back involved. Of course, Jack Stacey and Ben Crezeny are expected back as well the other side of the break. So that should maybe just alleviate a little bit of pressure from those that have had to play week in, week out. But, you know, you kind of go back to that Charlton game and you've got someone like Liam Gibbs playing in a very unnatural position and against, you know, a very physical Charlton side that are in your faces and you know what they're going to throw at you from a sort of attacking perspective. It's going to be long balls into the box. They're looking for headers. They're looking for flick-ons. And I think, you know, Norwich on the whole dealt with that pretty well, you know, apart from, yeah, 5-10 minute spell sort of midway through the second half where, yeah, Charlton got a little bit up of steam and had a few opportunities, but nothing really of major note. Kovacevic had a very quiet afternoon really in goal. And it's probably one of them where you sort of reflect on the first half and think they could have easily and probably should have been more, you know, further ahead. Look at some of the opportunities they had and they probably squandered. And on another day, that scoreline would have looked a lot more favourable and a lot sort of, yeah, pleasing on the eye, I guess. But it was hard fought. It's 3 points and, yeah, it does keep things marginally interesting. I think, you know, the top six still feels like a very, very long way away. Realistically, they probably have to win all 7 games to give themselves any opportunity to even be in and around that conversation come the end of the season. But it just puts that extra building block, I think, in place for, yeah, moving towards the summer and the fact that this team is now able to compete not only at home, but away from home at difficult sort of stadiums where, you know, it has been tough down the years. Norwich have sort of folded under the pressure and crumbled. But there kind of feels like there's more of a sort of steel around this squad and Clement is able to, yeah, find the formulas to get wins wherever they go. So, yeah, I think it all bodes for something, yeah, relatively positive moving into the summer.
Yes, which increasingly feels like that's where people's heads are at, doesn't it? Because, look, and we've said this a few times, you can never write it off until it becomes mathematically impossible. And there have been case studies in the past where clubs have put together incredible runs towards the back end of seasons and ended up in the playoffs and gone up as well in the sort of really two examples that I can think of, which is Blackpool under Ian Holloway back in, when would that have been, 2010-ish, where they won a lot of games towards the back end of that season to get themselves in the top six and went on to win it. And then more recently, the Aston Villa team, who was managed by Dean Smith as well. I think they won 10 in a row at the back end of that season. Obviously, Norwich beat them on the final day, but at that stage, it was looking pretty good for them. And that managed to get them into the top six. And they eventually went up as well. So there is precedent for doing that, but I would describe it as improbable rather than impossible. I think that's maybe the better way to do it. And of course we know what Philippe Clement is like. We know him a little bit by now, is that whilst it is a possibility, he is going to push for it. But I think even if it doesn't end in the playoffs, there's still a lot to get your teeth into, because you look at some of the games that Norwich City have left this season and they are against teams that are fighting at the top end of the Championship table. And that's going to give us a real indication of just how close to those teams they are, obviously prior to a summer of adding and trimming and shaping their squad. I mean, you look in their last 7 games that they've got. Obviously, it's Portsmouth after the break and then a really exciting for me doubleheader again, because it's Ipswich, but equally because of where those teams are in the league. But Millwall away, who are obviously fighting for automatic promotion, and then Ipswich at home, who are also fighting for automatic promotion. How close can Norwich City get to those teams? Can they be competitive? Can they be more than competitive? Can they extract results from them? Because if we're going to have one very, very minor blot on what has been a very good copybook under Philippe Clement so far, it's probably that Middlesbrough game, isn't it? That Southampton game where, in particular away from home, they obviously beat Coventry at Carrow Road, but where they've just been unable to convert what's been really productive, positive performances into results. Obviously, that's Bristol City Derby, who are in and around the playoffs, Swansea, who are in and around them as well, and then Hull on the final day. So there's some really interesting fixtures there to get your teeth into from a Norwich City perspective that may well just give us some clues, some crumbs as to maybe how competitive they are, Adam, but also potentially the areas that really need kind of investing and adding to over the summer.
Yeah, I think particularly kind of the hostile nature of the Den, I'd imagine that place is going to be, yeah, full of expectation and rocking heading into that game on Easter Monday. You know, Norwich have experienced kind of that down the years. I sort of go back to that game under David Wagner 2 or 3 years back now, where both sides were sort of trying to target the top six, and that felt like a huge result on that day. And that's probably been the one thing I would say that sort of escaped Norwich over recent years. They haven't really been able to go to maybe sides that are in and around the top six away from home and extract results. So yeah, I think this is a really good kind of acid test for maybe where this group's at, particularly when the fact that you've got a few players back, and that is kind of the last game before the big one on that Saturday against Ipswich at home, which, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating game now. You know, I think Norwich kind of, if you go back to October and the reverse fixture, it was very much kind of an inevitability, I think, that they were going to lose that game, and nobody really went to Portman Road with anything but, yeah, sort of blind optimism and just that little tiny flicker of hope that maybe Norwich could go there and do something. But I think most people expected the result to go against them on that day, where I think now, you know, we've seen it under Clement, their home record's been really strong over 2026. I think it's 7 wins from 9 in the league or in all competitions, and they've been really, really strong and really, yeah, putting teams to the sword. Even, you know, Coventry, sort of the way they managed to dismantle them in the second half, you know, was a positive show. And I think they've kind of got to use that sort of template to try and get something against Ipswich. And of course, the sort of added fuel, I guess, of the derby, and the sort of fans are obviously going to be up for that as well. That would be absolutely huge, really, if they could get a result in that. Maybe not for what their sort of table or position will look like come the end of the season, because sort of for the reasons we've just said, it feels very unlikely they're going to be challenging for the top six. You know, as you said, not totally impossible, but more likely improbable. But I think just for moving into the summer, the fact that they would have then, yeah, faced two teams that are banging that sort of automatic promotion race, and if they can get results there, or at least very positive performances, then I think it's just kind of, yeah, extra optimism, I think, moving into the summer.
Yes, and I mean, you look at the league table since Philippe Clement has taken over on the 18th of November. Norwich, 45 points they've taken from 24 games. It's only Ipswich and Coventry that have taken more in that period, 46 for both of those. So it does give you an indication that level playing field is going to be there come that Carrow game next month. And I think it's one that hopefully everyone of a yellow and green persuasion is really excited for. And hopefully someone's going to come on and tell us how excited they are, because that would be fantastic as well. We want to hear from you tonight if you want to come on and join us and share your excitement for the East Anglian Derby and how you see it going, and maybe what you're going to be looking for in the final stretch of the campaign against, as we said, some really interesting challenges. Then do come on, request to speak, and the floor will be yours. We want to hear from you tonight. You don't want to just hear us droning on, surely. So we want to hear from you guys as well. That's the purpose of these, and particularly as we move forward as well. We want to make them less about us and more about you having your say on Norwich City. But if you want to stay here and listen, then that's fine, no pressure at all. And I guess we can pick up on the form more generally, Adam, whilst we wait for some brave person who's going to be the first to step in and speak to us this evening. If you look at the form since the turn of the year, that in particular feels like the most impressive aspect of what Philippe Clement has done so far to turn Norwich City around. It felt like probably that first period was about stabilising their performances, removing the chaos from what they were trying to do. And this period from about February onwards, but I think we could probably extend that to January if we're being honest, but I think in terms of performances, February has been about really kicking on and implementing what they want to do and adding some tactical flair to what they do. And you look at it since the turn of the year, 15 games, we're not talking about kind of a 5-6 sample of games where a team can run a little bit hot and it can be maybe a little bit deceptive, but we're talking now about a real prolonged period of games. Norwich City have taken 33 points from 15. That's obviously a points per game of 2.13. I don't think it's very sustainable, for the reason that if they did it over the course of a season, it would be 107 odd points, which feels very unlikely for them to achieve. But more so Clement's record generally, which I think is about 1.89, which would get them to about 88 points in the Championship over a season. So if you kind of regress to the mean, they're a high-ranking playoff team. And if you go since the turn of the year, they were an automatic promotion winning team. All of these signs are what is providing, I guess, the enthusiasm and the optimism for where Norwich City find themselves at the moment. What has been the biggest thing for you that is really driving that excitement heading into next season? Obviously, digging a little bit deeper than just purely those results and those stats and those numbers.
I think there's probably a couple of pillars for me. One would be the January transfer window. And generally speaking, I think you look across it, they pretty much nailed all of that business. All of them have come in and had a relatively positive impact. You look at someone like Ali Ahmed, I think it's 7 goal contributions now in 13 games. Paris Magoma, obviously clearly not still sort of up to a fitness level where he can play week in, week out 90 minutes yet. But what we've seen of him has been flashes of brilliance and clearly a very talented player and somebody that Clement wanted when he was at Rangers. So someone he's well aware of. And you can sort of maybe read between the lines that he had an influence in that. You know, then you've got some of the other lads that have come in as well in sort of other areas that have also strengthened the side. I think that for me is probably the key one. You know, Mo Torre, we've obviously not seen a huge amount of yet, but the bits we have seen is somebody who is clearly, yeah, still a little bit raw, but someone who's got talent and knows where the back of the net is. And I think if they can, yeah, almost use that and kind of get the recruitment on the whole right in the summer, which is something that, you know, has been questioned, I think, down the years in recent times, certainly under Ben Napper's watch, with Clement and Napper kind of at the helm. You'd hope that if they can yeah, sort of uncover a few more gems and add that to what now feels like a squad that's starting to develop. You know, I think that's probably the other element I want to pick up on is you look at some of these players who in the early parts of the season, under Liam Manning, you sort of questioned whether they were good enough for the championship or sort of able to, yeah, certainly propel Norwich to where they wanted to be. And that's the top six and eventually try and get themselves into the Premier League. And you thought, I don't know. And now you sort of look around the squad and, yeah, there's a lot more of a sort of consistency to it. He's sort of managing to get the same players on the pitch week in, week out, and they're only getting better. You know, Pelle Mattsson is probably the prime example of that. I think technically we could see the qualities he's had throughout the season, but now he's delivering week in, week out, and hopefully he can add a few more goals to his game as well, because that's something that they're starting to do well, and that's kind of share goals around the pitch and not be solely reliant on a sort of a certain striker up front, which is kind of what was the case in the early parts of the season. It felt like if Josh Sargent didn't score, then
we
weren't going to score. So, yeah, looks like we've got somebody who wants to come on and speak, which is good.
We have. Let's bring Mike in, who's been waiting. Hopefully you can hear us, Mike, and you can join the debate. The floor is yours, my friend. What would you like to say about Norwich City? Because there's plenty to go at.
Hi, Connor. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, my friend.
Oh, well done. Yeah, I was trying to desperately think of a question for you. and I suspect this has been answered in your Q&A earlier this week, but I've worked out that we've probably got about 35 players in the first team squad, not who are all fit, I hasten to add. Given that we probably will, I don't know, buy two, three, maybe four players in the summer, taking up to 38, 39, that is a massive squad. So I'm thinking that we're probably going to have to get rid of maybe up to 10 players. So here's a three-part question for you and Adam. Who are the definite people that are going to leave? Who are the possible or probable people who are going to leave? And that who are those likely to go out on loan? Is that too many for you?
No, I think we can just about handle that. Thanks, Mike. I think it's, so I'll take part one. Adam will take part two of it. I'll go with the easy bit, which is kind of for me, the definite. I'm struggling to see, if I'm honest, any of the players who are out of contract, being given a new deal, to be honest, just in terms of age profile. I think we know what Norwich's squad is at the moment and what it looks like, and also where they want to take it. They want to add younger players. They want to carry a younger team. I think there's of course going to be a balance to that. But in terms of the players that are out of contract, if I kind of give you the list of it, I mean, obviously we've heard from Emi Marcondes already about his future, but you've got Jeffrey Schlupp in there. You've got Shane Duffy in there. I think Tony Springett has an option, so that may be slightly different, but Dan Barden as well, the other one, the goalkeeper, obviously we know Kenny McLean's contract option has been taken up. So I think that at least gives you a little bit of a head start if you're going to trim it that way. Sam Field as well, I think is a really interesting one, because from my perspective, I kind of feel like he's maybe, this is a really kind of robotic thing to say because he's a human being, but it does feel like that has kind of served its purpose in terms of he's come in, offered some depth. But equally with Mirko Topic coming back in the summer, with obviously Pelle Mattsson fit, I don't know, do they go back and add him on a permanent on the basis of, like you say, the squad size, which is huge? I think that's probably unlikely. And then Harry Amass obviously is the other one who's on loan and we haven't seen him really, which is a bit of a shame. So I think that would give you a little bit of a head start on the squad. And then obviously I'll maybe get ahead of Adam and let him speak in a moment. But in terms of the sum that are maybe on the edge that you could kind of see going both ways, I think Yakov Medic is one for me. I'm not sure that has really worked for either party, beyond obviously his excellence as a striker that I think we all really enjoyed, but that's not quite worked for him in terms of minutes there. I think people will look at someone like Matej Jurasek in terms of, you know, has that been a success? How do they get him more minutes? And maybe that's the loan route they look down. Maybe Philippe Clement gets him back in the summer and feels he really can get more out of him as well. Obviously you're gonna have Antti Sihanouks back on that right as well, so that's gonna create some competition for him. I think Jacob Wright is someone I think is really interesting, because you know we just listed the midfield options there. It's gonna be really difficult for him to get into that too, I think, certainly consistently. Philippe Clement seems to see him as a number 10, but now you've got Slimani and you've got Mag Homer there. So is there a position for him? Do they need to get him out on loan? Liam Gibbs likewise. So I think there's a few players on the fringes. I'll let Adam pick up in terms of maybe some of the others that I've missed, because I'm sure there are some. Adam, I'll throw it over to you.
Well, I think Emmanuel Forsen is another one who's interesting. Player who I like. I think technically speaking, he's a gifted footballer. But again, you look at that sort of consistency point of view, he's had injuries and not been able to be readily available for the squad. But I'm also intrigued maybe to see where he fits into the jigsaw. We saw him maybe play in that sort of more attacking midfield role in sort of the latter stages of last season. But sort of predominantly been played sort of on the right when he's been fit and available. But I think given the Norwich, I would expect would sort of, yeah, go into the transfer market and try and sign some players for that area of the pitch. I'm not sure that he has a role here long term. Another one, I guess, that's maybe slightly interesting is Matthias Grisgoren, a player who they paid big money for, of course, last summer and has had to sort of, yeah, deal with a lot of the burden over recent weeks with their lack of striker availability. And I think technically speaking, in terms of, yeah, an actual finisher, I think he's probably the best that they've got in the building, but it's pretty clear really to see that he's probably not the sort of striker that Philippe Clement would naturally gravitate towards. Just in terms of his profile, you kind of look at Mukama and Touré in terms of their size and their physique and that sort of pace and that power that they both have. He's kind of not quite into that mould. And I think we probably both expect that Norwich would delve back into the market this summer and kind of go big on a number nine. I think probably the ship has sailed on Hoff, who they signed or tried to sign, sorry, in January. But I'd imagine someone of that ilk would be who they'd go for in the summer. And I can't really see them, yeah, bringing four strikers on board next season because they've got to try and manage that and keep them all happy. And yeah, that feels like that would be a difficult balance. So with that, I'd imagine that one would have to depart and probably just kind of on the basis of that, I'm intrigued to maybe see whether he has a long-term future here.
I'll throw it back over to you, Mike. Is there anyone there that you think we've missed or anyone that maybe you feel comes into that conversation?
I was just wondering whether one or two of the people that have had a few injury problems like Mahovo could possibly go out on loan. I think Gibbs certainly could go on loan, although, you know, as you've said many times, wherever he's filled in, he's actually done quite a good job, but he's a sort of Paul Madeley of the team and probably a bit too old for you for that one, but anyway, he used to play for Leeds back in the 70s. And I don't think he's really established a position for him, so I think maybe he has to go out on loan. Not sure about the goalkeeping situation at all. Grimshaw, I'm not sure, is good enough. Molden, I have no idea, so I wouldn't be surprised that there's perhaps movement there with two new goalkeeping coaches since last year. On top of that, I think I'm really struggling. I'm wondering about one or two of the under 21s who might be moved on. Ken Abo would be one I'd be looking at maybe. In fact, may I ask a second question? There's one or two players now coming through from the academy, like Errol Mundell-Smith. There's a young lad called Steele, I think, and obviously Miles. Would you agree they look as though they could be the next ones off the conveyor belt?
Yeah, I was speaking to someone last night, actually, a fan who was telling me about Khalil Steele, who apparently has done very well in the 18s. They watch a lot of 18s games and has been very impressed. And he stepped up to the 21s and I think won and scored a penalty on his debut, which is impressive. I saw him play in the Youth Cup and I remember being quite impressed by him. But it's always difficult when you get kind of those younger ones. And I think he's still 17. To really kind of assess them fully. So yeah, I think he's definitely one to watch. Miles is an interesting one because clearly we've seen a lot of him and I think technically I don't think anyone would dispute his quality, but clearly there is something from Philippe Clement's perspective that is making him unsure about dropping him into a championship setting. And I'm sure that is probably the physical side of things. Is he robust enough for the championship? Is he able to come in and really compete and offer something at that level? That's clearly the aspect that they're trying to build up. And I also think in terms of what a Clement team looks like, which is quite aggressive and quite intense and quite physical, is he the sort of profile that you can then drop in for that? And if he's not, then that then opens a really interesting conversation about maybe what's next for him. But yeah, Errol Mundell-Smith is definitely one that is liked. I think it's been interesting just how, big Clement has gone on him in terms of his attitude, his application. Clearly as well, I think maybe the exciting aspect is he's been playing out of position. He's a winger primarily that
has had to fill in at striker. And, you know, again, is there going to be a real route for him to the first team next year? I'm not sure, because as we mentioned, the sheer amount of options, and I probably expect them to add in wide areas again, if not a couple, then definitely one body. So that would then block kind of his pathway. So this is all something you have to be mindful of. And I think, you know, potentially a loan route for him to get in more consistent minutes to really kind of kick on what he will have done at the back end of this season in terms of getting real minutes for Norwich would maybe be a positive thing. And then I guess, Adam, the other one we have seen kind of floating around the group a little bit is Zach Bowman, who travelled with the squad to Charlton. He's kind of been the extra body that has been going there. He's been training with the first team. He's clearly someone that Philippe Clement likes. He's a kind of attacking midfielder, central midfielder that they signed from Manchester United. The reports on him seem to be quite positive as well. So I think it does seem like, Adam, that there are a few options coming out from the academy. But obviously, I guess Elliot Miles is always going to be that one that people speak about, given he's maybe the one we've seen the most at first team level prior to obviously this burst that Errol Mundell-Smith has had.
Yeah, I think the fact that Miles managed to get a call up to the Welsh kind of squad, I think he was sort of in there sort of pre-camp and Bellamy had a little bit of a look at him, to have that call up without having played any senior football kind of speaks volumes, I think, about sort of the quality that he's got. And I know he's now in their under 21 squad, so that'll be intriguing to see how he gets on over this international period. But yeah, clearly someone who kind of look at his size and stature, and that's not everything, but as you kind of outlined there, I think the robustness element is an intriguing one. Does he kind of fit what's needed for the championship? I don't feel he quite does at this moment in time. And that's why, yeah, I think he's one that ideally, if they could maybe get out on loan in the summer, would be perfect. And you kind of look in recent years at maybe some of the players that they have managed to get out on loan to League One clubs. I kind of look at Abu Kamara, who I think had probably a similar kind of profile and stature. And he went down to Portsmouth at the time and had an excellent season. And okay, it didn't work out for him when he returned back at Norwich. And now, they decided to obviously sell him on due to the transfer request, but they managed to recoup a relatively high fee for him, which, you know, looking back now, looks to be an excellent piece of business, because he hasn't really kicked on anywhere that he's been since. So I think that's probably maybe the route for him. You mentioned Zach Bowman, who, yeah, Ukraine under 19 international, very, very talented footballer by all accounts. And again, you don't really make it in the Manchester United Academy if you've not got something about you. So clearly a player who, again, I can't really say that I've seen anything of in terms of in the flesh, but he must have something about him to have played for them. So that's another interesting one. And yeah, Mundell-Smith is tough, because I think if they're going to go big for a striker in the upcoming window, I know obviously he probably prefers playing it in some of the wider areas, but again, we probably expect them to go and add in those areas. Is he going to get the minutes he needs next season at Norwich? I don't know. So would he be more benefited to going out on loan and playing week in, week out somewhere? Then that probably feels like a better route to me. So yeah, I think I could see a little bit of churn in that academy. They've clearly signed a few players as well. I think they've got the lad from Ireland, Vinnie Leonard, coming in, who's very highly rated by all accounts as well. So that they're clearly doing work in that area. I'd imagine there'll be a few more additions to the academy over the summer as well. So yeah, I could see a little bit of movement there. And of course, you've also got some movement as well at kind of head coach level and stuff, you know, that sort of thing as well, with Rashford still being linked to Everton and stuff. So yeah, I think that there will be some change there.
Yes, it does feel like that Rashford stuff is going to move as well, before the start of next season, but nothing last time we checked that was official on that yet. And I think Norwich still waiting for kind of formal contact, but the expectation is certainly that Rashford does take up that position. So we'll see how that evolves. That's going to require some reshuffling as well, and maybe a little bit of resetting from an academy perspective. But what they could do really is some stability in terms of head coach level, because, if you want to develop players for the first team, they need to play in a way that is consistent with the first team. And if you don't have any stability at that level, it's really hard to create players that are capable of then stepping in, I think. So, I think that's a really interesting point, and it's something that the club has been really good at doing. But equally, it's been, you know, it's worth noting that it is very hard to push players through, and that's why so many teams struggle to do it. So it's about maybe trying to push those through. So you've got Gabe Forsyth on who's been injured for a long period of time, whether he can come in and affect it as well. And like you said earlier, Mike, Lucien Mahova, I think, is an interesting one as well, because when he's been in the first team, we've seen the talent, we've seen the capability, but his body has clearly struggled to kind of cope with championship football. And I think he's still yet to play 90 minutes in the championship. So there are clearly some issues that need to overcome there. Mike, before we let you go, in terms of generally and how you're feeling about Norwich City, talk to us a little bit about what you've made of what Philippe Clement has done. It's hard not to be very optimistic and excited about where the football club is going at the moment.
Yeah. Sorry, just before I answer that,
of course,
did you have any thoughts on the goalkeeping situation I mentioned?
Yeah, sorry, I'll come back on that. Yeah, I think it's goalkeeping. So Norwich obviously had a big overhaul last summer. I would be remiss of us not to mention it because it is a factor. But George Long obviously comes back in the summer as well.
And, oh, heaven help us!
And so that's going to be what, 4 or 5 goalkeepers that they're going to have, with Vicente Reyes on there as well. Probably another player that maybe they'll look to move on this summer. I know they were open to doing that last summer. Grimshaw and Molden, I think 2 and 3 positions in a goalkeeping department is really interesting. And the kind of feeling last summer was if they could get 2 goalkeepers that kind of tick the homegrown box, because there are certain rules around that and players that you need in your squad. And it's an easy win if you've kind of got at least obviously your second choice, but if you've got a third choice that can then step in, then you're always kind of got a homegrown slot filled, and that gives you more flexibility with outfield players and players from overseas and players who aren't homegrown to get them into your squad. So I know that was a factor, but equally there's a thing about personality, which is almost in many regards for the second goalkeeper a bigger point than ability, because you need to have someone. And I always go back to Oya Nyland a couple of years ago. They signed to be a number two and maybe just didn't have the understanding of what that role would be and couldn't really understand why he wasn't playing football. And you need someone who's kind of a good egg, certainly as a number three keeper as well. But clearly you need someone that's going to really challenge. And I think the issue last year, and I know you kind of alluded to this, Mike, in your comment, was the gap between Angus Gunn and George Long was too great. Grimshaw is at least someone who's played a lot of championship games. I would agree with you. I think we've seen probably in the cup games that he maybe doesn't have the quality to step up on a consistent basis. And I'm kind of quite happy with Vladan Kovacevic. I recognise maybe not everyone is. I know that the erratic side of his game, which is there and is undeniable, is a cause of concern for most people. But I think generally this season, the positive aspects have outweighed that in terms of some of the saves that he's made. And it was interesting listening to Jed Steer, who obviously is far more knowledgeable on goalkeepers than I am or ever will be, kind of saying that maybe what you want is a goalkeeper who can achieve that sort of level where, look, sometimes you're going to get some sixes, but occasionally you might get a 9, and they're the ones in the championship that win you real points. And I still think over the course of the season, if you look at it, he's probably won Norwich more points than he's lost them. I think he's got better since Clermont has come in as well, in terms of that concentration levels and decision making. There's still been some errors, but to kind of put it bluntly, I'm not sure he'd be at Norwich City if those elements weren't in his game still. So I think he's probably done enough to have another shot at it next season, and then you could obviously review it from there. Adam, what do you make about the goalkeeping situation generally, to kind of answer Mike's question?
I would probably echo your sentiments on Kovacevic. I look at some of the games this season, and yeah, his involvement in pretty much guaranteeing Norwich 3 points or earning them a point at different places, particularly in kind of those early stages of the season where the performances were pretty poor. You know, I kind of look at the Portsmouth away game. The penalty save was a crucial moment. I thought he was very good at Blackburn in kind of getting them the result. And yeah, I feel certainly under Clermont as well, we've probably not noticed him as much, which is probably a good thing in the sense of the extra protection from, yeah, the players in front of him, and the central defensive partnership now feels very solid, and hopefully they can retain those two next season in McConville and Cordoba, and then even kind of moving forward sort of into the rest of the spine of the team. McLean and Mattson again look sort of a very nice partnership in that area of the field. And I think for those reasons, you know, and this was kind of evident again on Saturday, he didn't really come under too much pressure. I think there's probably still areas to work on, you know, kind of maybe coming and claiming the ball at different points. I think there's maybe areas there that can be looked at, but probably not really helped as well with sort of the instability in the sort of the coaching department, as Mike sort of alluded to earlier on as well. So that hopefully will help iron a few things out. So I think, yeah, I think he's worthy of another go next season. And then maybe if we come to January and they decide, well, actually, you know what, let's go and find someone else, then I think that's maybe a different point. But for the here and now, yeah, I can't see a huge amount of shuffling there.
Back to you then, Mike, in terms of, obviously you can add anything on that goalkeeper debate, but yeah, come on, tell us how excited you are by what's going on at the Norwich,
well,
at the moment.
With regard to the goalkeeping debate, I have got a bit of experience there, which I won't bore you with, but I always think that if you've got a player who is capable of the 9 out of 10s, it's far easier to coach them to get from the 6 to the 9 than the other way round, mm-hmm. because the sixes are the basis of goalkeeping. So when you're talking about, the shot, the basic shot saving, he's okay. The miraculous saves he's very good at. The only issue I have with him is he's not terribly good on crosses from corners or dominating his 6-yard area, but I think that's coachable. And he's got the height and the experience and the personality to become very good in that area. So I'm pretty much on your side there, Connor. I think I'm happy with him. And with Grimshaw, yeah, he's not good enough to be number one, but I think he's probably just about good enough to be number two. And then to answer your main question about how I feel, it kind of, this situation now kind of reminds me of the Lambert days where you didn't really feel that any team were definitely going to beat us. I mean, we've lost to Southampton, to Middlesbrough, to Birmingham. I would argue all three games were winnable, and we probably, if we'd had a number nine, we would have won all three or at least got points. So as we sit here at the moment, I think next season with the playoffs coming down to number eight, that's got to be the bare minimum. My worry would be, obviously, we're going to have at least two, if not three, good teams coming down from the Premiership. So that would be a worry. But, Clement doesn't lose two games on the trot. So, anything is possible. So, in summary, really excited.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it. We'll let you go. But thanks for your questions and for coming on and for your thoughts. And yeah, that stat around, not losing two on the bounce is pretty remarkable. It's not just one that obviously, goes back from Clement at Norwich. He can go all the way back through his Rangers career. And I think that's the way as well. You have to go back to the final games at Monaco for the last time he lost back to back games, which is, pretty remarkable. We have got a couple of questions from people who maybe don't want to come on and speak, which is absolutely fine, but I have put them in the comments. There's one from Shane and one from Alfie as well, which I'll read in a moment. But first from Shane, who started by saying, just want to take this time to wish Liam Manning all the best and hope he comes back to Huddersfield stronger. Might be a lot of the reason why it didn't work out for Manning at Norwich. Best wishes goes out to him. And then the question, which I'll bowl at you, Adam, is how many of this current group do you think is currently Premier League ready? What do you make of that question?
Ooh. Yeah, that is a tough question. Without having sort of seen any of these players obviously in the flesh at Premier League level, I feel Mattson's probably the obvious one, if I'm being honest, just in terms of, he's now had sort of public backing from Clement.
It's a shame we didn't see him at Leeds, isn't it? Because that would have been the real test, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I think it was post Sheffield United now in his post-match press conference, and there was some Danish media there, and they sort of asked Clement a little bit about his progress, and I think we put the clip out on social, and Clement basically said that Norwich have got to keep up with his progress, because if not, he will eventually surpass their level and go and play at a very elite top end of the game. And those echo sentiments really were said yesterday as well by Emi Marcondes in some media he'd done in Tips Bladet, which is sort of a Danish outlet, and he's sort of, again, kind of pressed the claims that Mattson has got the quality, the ability to eventually become a very top end footballer. And for kind of those reasons, I guess, by the meter that those two are in the game and have experience in the game, you kind of had to take their words at face value. And anybody that's watched Mattson really over kind of the last 2-3 months, certainly sort of before his injury and then since he's been back, I think it's very hard to argue that he's not eventually going to play at Premier League or certainly top European elite level. Very, very gifted footballer. And that sort of long search and process they had last summer that eventually landed him at Norwich now looks, a very worthwhile one because, I think he's an exciting one. There's a few that I feel have got potential to be Premier League players in the future. Cordoba has certainly improved a lot this season, and you kind of look at all the attributes he has, and as a sort of left-footed defender, and they're sort of a harder buy generally in football. I think he's one who could, with another maybe season or two at a Championship level, consistently improving and sort of proving himself, could become a Premier League grade player. McConville obviously is only 20 still and
still needs a little bit more exposure maybe to sort of top end football, but I didn't think he looked out of place at Elland Road, and he's got a really big game as well tomorrow night against Italy for Northern Ireland. So that'll be an intriguing one to see how close he can get to them. They're probably the obvious ones I feel within the group. There's players as well like Makama that I think, you know, could eventually get there as well. But that is kind of the only thing I think with this current Norwich group. It is so young. And there's a lot of development for a lot of these players yet before they maybe reach their potential and their peak. And, for those reasons, really, it's kind of difficult to maybe sort of put names in the frame for who's ready to be in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, do you know what? I've thought this a couple of times. Actually, I'll just put out a last call first, but this is the last call for you to come and join us. We're going to be live for about 5-10 minutes more. So, if you want to jump on, this is your last chance to do so. You can request to speak on your screen. I thought for a little while now, and it's a bit of a stretch, but I think there is a comparison there. If you think about, so when Mikel Arteta went in Arsenal, can you remember they had that summer where they just bought loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of young players? And it feels like it's been a slow, gradual kind of build, obviously, to where they are now. I think there's a little bit of that in what Norwich City are doing. And of course, there are going to be players, as we discussed earlier, that are going to be cut and they're going to kind of fall by the wayside and maybe don't make the grade. And they're going to have to make tough choices on. But if you can generally keep that core and keep that kind of growth going, that kind of maybe feels like the blueprint that Norwich City are following to an extent. And, yeah, I'd throw Oscar Schwartau into the mix. Obviously, Rue McConville as well. I think there are a few that you can chuck in there. We've got a few more kind of written questions, so I'll go through those. Alfie saying, I think we need to sort out the problem of coming out terrible in the first half and then acting like prime Barcelona in the second half. We need those consistent prime Barcelona games. Even if we lose, we don't give up and keep going. And then he said, what do you think Clement can do? He can turn this team that are poor in the first half and brilliant in the second half around. It's interesting, isn't it? Perspective and the way it goes often in football, because prior to Clement coming in, they were so poor in the second half. I think 70% of their goals came in the second half in the Liam Manning era. They got worse and worse and worse as games have gone on. They're now on a run where I think it's 13 second halves without conceding, which is absolutely remarkable. But I think there is a point. Certainly recently, it feels like maybe there's been a couple of slow starts. I can think about, obviously, the Southampton game, maybe the most recent one, Birmingham at home as well, that they lost. I'm sure you can probably chuck another couple of examples in there. But there are some cases of that. It's difficult really to pinpoint maybe why that is or how to solve it at times. But not to go full manager, but I guess you would maybe point at just how many players they're missing and that lack of rotation in terms of maybe just kind of shaking off some of those cobwebs that go into games. But I'm sure there are kind of footballing reasons. I'll probably have to drill down into it a bit deeper. But yeah, Adam, what about you in terms of answering that question? Is there anything that Norwich can do in terms of starting maybe a little bit quicker than they have been doing?
Yeah, we'd have to maybe put that question to Philippe himself, because yeah, it's difficult to maybe sort of really pinpoint a reason for that. I do think, yeah, the amount of games they've had to play maybe in recent weeks and sort of the toll that would have taken on all these players, just kind of mentally and physically, it must be testing, you know. And you sort of said at the top of the show, you know, get the violins out maybe for these players. But you can imagine that is quite difficult. And maybe it does take a little bit of time to grow into games, particularly with quite a young group. It might just be kind of getting used to different environments and, you know, kind of what different teams pose. Cause I think the Championship, you see it generally across the board. Every team's kind of got a little bit more of a defined style that's different to each other. You've got more physical teams. You've got teams that want to have the ball on the pitch. You know, you've got teams that will press you high. You've got teams that will sit deep. And I think it's probably just maybe working out what that kind of test is going to look like, as much as there's a lot of data and, you know, a lot of work that goes into sort of researching these teams before they play them. I think until you maybe get out on the pitch and kind of get a feel for it, it can take a little bit of time to, yeah, just grow into things and get used to it. So maybe that's playing a factor, but it's nothing that I'm hugely concerned about. I think hopefully sort of over a full pre-season, Philippe Clement can, yeah, instill a lot more messaging and also just kind of the fitness levels will hopefully reach a sort of more peak level where they're able to, yeah, play full 90s at sort of the highest, end of what he wants them to do in terms of on the pitch. So yeah, no real major concerns around that point, I don't think.
couple more questions then, because my stomach is growling angrily at me to get some food. you can again choose the size of the violin you want to play there for me. Mark Scar saying, hi guys, in November there was a clamour for fans to get rid of sporting director Ben Napper. 4 months on, how do you view that situation now? This is a really interesting one, Adam, I think, and I know one of our columnists is going to be writing about this at the weekend. I think it's really interesting generally how sporting directors are now perceived. I think they've almost been dragged a little bit in line with head coaches, in that if you think about sporting directors at the very start that we saw them in this country, really about 10 years ago, maybe just under that, I think it was 2017, Stuart Webb was appointed. There were sporting directors before him, of course. The idea was always that they kind of set the football strategy, and that the coach, as a result, would become a little bit more interchangeable because you had someone there to oversee the long-term strategy of it. And it feels like increasingly, as time has worn on, they've kind of got pulled in. And I'm not talking just specifically about Norwich here. I think the game generally, they've got pulled a lot closer to the head coach. And I think now we're kind of seeing what feels like the new wave in the game, where almost clubs are beginning to now split that sporting director role into lots of different ones to maybe make it a little bit more specific and to give people more responsibility around things, and also to help out whoever the sporting director is, because that is a very broad role. And ultimately it feels like they kind of get judged on two elements, which is the head coaches they pick and the recruitment. And often the recruitment isn't always done by them. Of course they have a say in it and they're judged by it, but you've got heads of recruitment and who are kind of independent to that. And then you've got whole recruitment teams, and it's often the sporting director doing the deals. But in terms of player identification, that physically isn't typically the sporting director. And often they can feel a little bit like a glorified head of recruitment. So I think it's interesting to see how that role has evolved and changed in English football. But to bring it back to kind of Ben Napper generally, I guess it's kind of probably what one do you want to take, isn't it? Do you want to take the Ben Napper that obviously was pre-Clement? Do you want to take the one that was obviously post-hiring Clement? Because I think you can criticise on one hand, obviously, everything that happened, and then you can praise everything that's happened subsequently. So I think it's a really difficult one to assess. I think my view heading into next season would be Norwich needs stability. They haven't had that for a long period of time. They haven't had a coach. I think one of their last four head coaches has done over a year in the job. There hasn't been that stability there. I think there are green shoots in terms of some of those players and the development, but also their strategy more generally feels like it's beginning to show a little bit of promise now of a head coach that is driving it in the right direction. For me, it would be a little bit odd then to try and make loads of changes behind the scenes. And again, I think there are kind of some internal shuffling in terms of Lee Dunn getting a bit closer to him as assistant sporting director. It feels like they may be watering down that head of recruitment role a little bit, because Lee Dunn clearly will have a huge say on kind of what goes on there. And that will still be part of his brief, I suspect, in a way it wasn't with Neil Adams' recruitment. So yeah, what do you make of that? That's a very long-winded answer for me, really. But what do you kind of make of Ben Napper's situation heading into this summer, Adam?
I think I'd probably stick for a lot of the reasons you outlined, really. Just stability. It's something that, yeah, Norwich have not had for a long time. And I think, you know, the questions around maybe his position and whether it was tenable or not, sort of in and around the autumn period when things were not going well, and you kind of looked at the signings on the pitch and you thought, yeah, they've not got value for money here whatsoever. And I think at that point it was a lot more fair. And the last thing you really want to be doing it over a really big summer for Norwich in terms of recruitment, in terms of, yeah, the strategy moving into next season, is probably removing someone who heads up a lot of the sporting side of Norwich City Football Club. And then having to kind of go through that process of, yeah, finding someone to replace him, who then wants to try and maybe implement different things or tries to, yeah, get sort of an understanding of the football club and maybe the values that it holds. That feels like a difficult thing to do and probably not the right time. So I think personally I'd probably stick with him. We've seen, you know, clearly the recruitment has improved and the players are getting better. And Lee Dunn is a vital sort of cog in that, and the fact that he's kind of got, yeah, a sort of promotion as such, I think that will probably help him. And they've got talented people behind the scenes who have been able to identify players who have come in and you kind of look at now and feel that Norwich could in the long term extract profit for, which, you know, hasn't been the case now for a few years. And Clement is clearly a big pillar in that. He went out and got him, and that looks to be at the moment a very big success. And if he can replicate that next season, then you'd have to feel that will end with Norwich being in the Premier League, which, you know, it's early days and I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but that kind of feels like the trajectory they're on. So I think it would be a little bit
remiss or too early to maybe consider removing him at this stage, until we kind of have, a little bit more of a sample, I guess, of what next season holds.
Yes, agreed. Final one for tonight then comes from Tom Shaw, who says, do you think that Ali Ahmed and Anis Ben Slimani will be able to make the Portsmouth game, considering their game on early Wednesday morning and travel time to get back seems too much to me. Might want to rest them until Millwall on Easter Monday. I mean, I put this to Philip Clement, all the days are rolling into one, Friday evening, when we had the pre-match press conference for Charlton, because it is a farcical situation where you've got two players who have championship games on the Friday who are going to be involved in games in the early hours UK time, on that Wednesday morning. And you think they're not going to be done there really until, let's say, much before 4 o'clock in the morning, UK time. Then they're going to have to fly back. It's going to be pretty late Thursday morning. You would imagine they're going to get back after sleeping and recovering and all of that stuff. Then they're going to walk straight back in, and I'm sure Norwich will push training back to give them a chance to maybe do some of the tactical stuff. And then you're going to have to make a very late call. I mean, it's just a ridiculous situation, Adam. And I think, look, there's clearly huge amounts of tradition in this country for the Easter schedule. The Premier League don't really have the Easter schedule because of the FA Cup one, but even that has been pushed to a Saturday. Could we maybe have just had one game over the Easter weekend for this year, bearing in mind that they're going to put them in the bin next year anyway, given what is a pretty farcical situation? Not just Clement that has spoken about this, but also Frank Lampard as well, of course.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at next season's kind of Easter schedule and whether the international break falls before that. Maybe that's kind of part of the decision making, because for all the reasons again that you just outlined there, it is an absolutely farcical situation that you've got two players that are going to be playing, potentially 90 minutes each, in Toronto on the early hours of Wednesday morning, and then going to have to travel, 12 hours odd back to the UK, and then to try and get rest and the recovery, which, you know, I think you kind of see it even in sort of the championship where Norwich are travelling back late from Southampton and they didn't get back till, I think Clement said, sort of 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday morning, and that sort of pushed the training back on that Thursday till a little bit later, and then that also delayed their travel down to Charlton on the Friday because of it. So the fact that puts their schedule out, and yet you've got two players now that are going to be the other side of the world who are going to be playing, just over 48 hours before a championship fixture on the Friday for the clubs that they're contracted to. That doesn't really sit right with me. And as much as, you know, it is an honour for these players to represent their countries, and that can't be forgotten, I think there has got to be a little bit of, realisation maybe from those who make these decisions around fixtures to kind of consider that, and the impact that might have. And I think for Norwich, probably this time round, it's probably a blessing that they're not really in a position where maybe they are fighting for automatic promotion or a top six push, or even the other end of the table and still in around the relegation zone and sort of fighting to stay in the championship, because the last thing you want is probably two of your more key players in attacking areas to be, potentially unavailable or not in a position where they can start or be involved in a big game over a whole weekend, really. There's two fixtures. And even the Monday is still a fast, and quick turnaround for them, given they'll be playing on the Friday. And that could impact results, that could, affect a whole season and what the outcome is. So that's the only maybe minor upside of Norwich sort of being mid-table and fairly comfortable, is that they probably can afford to rest them and, won't make the biggest amount of difference to their final outcome this season. But that doesn't mitigate it or negate the, issues that around, I think, that the scheduling, and I would completely agree with Clement, and his concerns, and Frank Lampard for that matter, because I think player welfare has got to be, more considered when they're expected to fly back from one place to the other, and then be involved, just over 48 hours later, for a championship fixture.
Yeah, I'm not sure Ali Ahmed has stopped running since he arrived at Norwich City either. So he's had to take a lot of minutes purely because of their situation in terms of lack of wingers and injuries and whatnot. So him in particular, I know I've had kind of a watchful eye on him in terms of, it feels like he's had a lot of load in the last couple of months. And it feels like Norwich could do with some bodies coming back, which hopefully they will have after the international break. Right, that draws us to a close this evening. Thank you very much all for joining us on our first space, especially to Mike for coming on and speaking. Of course, this one has hopefully just wiped away and cleaned any cobwebs that maybe there were, but we're hoping to obviously bring these back. So we will be back with you next Wednesday evening, all being well. We've got an England under-21 game at Carrow Road on Tuesday, which we will be at and covering as well, which should be interesting. Hopefully see some of you guys there as well, supporting the Young Lions before obviously that Good Friday game against Portsmouth. Adam, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you all very much for joining us as well. We will put this out, hopefully, all being well, again, as a podcast, so you can listen to it back in its entirety if you join us a little bit later. And hopefully we'll hear from a few more of you again next week. Until then, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening, and we'll see you again very soon. Cheers. Good night.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
On the under $3 menu at McDonald's, a McChicken is $2. Because when you're craving a McChicken, you deserve a McChicken. And now that McChicken is just $2 with McValue.
Limit time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.